Om Agyane Timiran Dasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshuan Militandina Dasma Shi Gurave Namaha Mukham Kuroti Vachalam Angum Bangayate Garin Yakripata Mahamade Shi Gurandina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nivishesha Shanyavari Pasta Chari Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare
Hare.
I'll speak a few words, although actually somehow I would prefer to chant more, but but should speak a little something, and Maharaj also should speak a little something also. So this morning we were speaking about Srila Prabhupada. And I think the title, which was, it was Accessing Srila Prabhupada's Mercy, although I didn't stick exactly to the theme, but nonetheless, the subject was Srila Prabhupada. And the reason is because devotees in our Boston temple are preparing for an event which is the 50th anniversary when our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada stepped foot on Western soil here in Boston on Commonwealth Pier. And that will take place The observation will be on September 19th and September 20th of this year, but actually September 17th was the actual date when he arrived in Commonwealth Pier from his journey across the ocean on Jaladuta, and carrying with him, which is known to most, nothing more than just a few rupees, some books, and the order of his spiritual master to bring Krishna consciousness to the Western world. And also carrying with him, obviously, was the blessings of the whole Guru Parampara, which preceded him. Because it was remarkable when we look at it what was he was able to accomplish in such a short period of time in impregnating the hearts of so many living beings with a desire to do something to please Krishna, and impregnating them not only with a desire to please Krishna but with the determination to make that the goal of their life. And to do something like that is not an easy task. And Srila Prabhupada accomplished it in a way that was left an impression on this planet that's continues even after his departure almost 40 years ago, that the Krishna consciousness and the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is still being spread with the purpose and of achieving what Srila Prabhupada always emphasized was the goal of chanting is to learn how to love God, to love Krishna. I think the last time I was here, maybe it was, I think it was at the Mal Krishna's home, we were speaking briefly. We spoke about how there's more to chanting than peace. I remember somehow touching on that topic. And indicating that although it's a byproduct that can be accomplished for those who actually really chant with deep desire to focus the mind on Krishna and to withdraw the mind from disturbing elements. And of course the mantra itself helps us by, because Krishna is present in the mantra. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, a verse Prabhupada would quote many times that describes that Krishna is none different than his name. So that when we chant Krishna's name sincerely, Krishna manifests himself to those who chant and acts from within the heart to dissipate the darkness and of ignorance or illusion and to bring that living being on his path, journey back towards his true eternal spiritual nature. And all that can be accomplished is, all that can be accomplished simply by chanting Krishna's name. So, Srila Prabhupada, therefore, not only gave us the chanting of the holy name as a means for mantra meditation, delivering the mind from disturbing elements, but he emphasized right from the very start when he introduced the chanting of the holy name of the Lord that there's a much greater objective which can be accomplished, that's simply a byproduct. Although sometimes people wonder how that byproduct can be achieved, and they question the efficacy of the chanting of the holy name, because sometimes it's very difficult to control the mind. And Prabhupada would explain, quoting Bhagavad Gita, that Arjuna said that the mind is more turbulent than trying to control the raging wind. And therefore, when we examine ourselves in our efforts to chant and in efforts to control the mind, the conclusion we should draw is that I can't do this alone. I need some strength. I need some help from a source greater than myself. And Srila Prabhupada, being the ambassador from the spiritual world and Lord Chaitanya, and being empowered to give the holy name to others, was that source of strength. And why was he that source of strength? And that's a little bit what I wanted to speak about tonight, and I'm sure Jaya Dwaita Maharaj can also speak about it, because he actually joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement very early on in 1968, was it? And although he doesn't talk much about those early times with Prabhupada, but he definitely associated with Prabhupada. Maharaj is very humble. Sometimes people may try to talk about their association with Prabhupada, and actually it may turn into more talking about themselves than Prabhupada. And if one's not careful, that we don't want to do that. And I know Maharaj is very careful to avoid something like that. He wants to make sure that Prabhupada's glories are truly and firmly established. But he can nonetheless speak about what he observed in the character of Srila Prabhupada personally through direct interaction. And whereas someone like myself, who actually came to know Srila Prabhupada personally 1972 was from reading Bhagavad Gita as it is. But I personally, I can honestly confess that although I didn't have much personal association with Prabhupada, although I did sit and listen to him speak, I did see him in several places and at certain events around the world, in Philadelphia and in New York and in India, and sat and heard him lecture. My interaction with him was not much in terms of speaking directly one-on-one. But I had the, nonetheless, my only qualification to speak about him is I can say as I was there. I was there. I saw him. And just seeing him in of itself, for me, was transformational. Although my association with him took place years before I even saw him. And that was when I was, I got Srila Prabhupada's book. And for me, it was, I'll speak about myself, but I guess it's, the point is only to give this small story was to show, again, how Prabhupada was able to really impact himself in the hearts of those who followed his instructions. Just that I was in Washington, D.C., at the time, living on, like a hippie. Wandered into a bookstore, Brentano's, on Wisconsin Avenue. I remember the place perfectly because that's where I met Prabhupada. And I wandered into the bookstore looking for a book on yoga because I was interested in yoga. And I went to the bookshelf in the yoga section and looked at different books on yoga. And then I picked up Bhagavad Gita as it is. And the first picture I opened to was a yogi sitting in yoga asana that showed the picture of him moving up through the different chakras. And then leaving the body and beyond was Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world. And I looked and saw that picture. I was thinking, this looks like a good book on yoga. And then, so I purchased the book. And interesting, it's a side point, but it's interesting. What's interesting is about 20 years later, I found out that the book wasn't even part of the Brentano's inventory. Some devotee had walked into the store and said, why not? And he dropped one of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita's on the bookshelf. His name was Damodar, the old Damodar. And of course, Brentano charged me the price that was on the back of the book, but I purchased it and I took it home and started reading it a little bit every day. I was living, I was working as a carpenter. My sister may not know much. This is my sister, by the way, Sandy. She's here with us last night and out of the program. She came tonight also. I don't know if she knows about those years when I was living in Washington, but I
learn a lot when I come. Consider my book. Leave it in the bookstore.
But anyways, I was working as a carpenter. I was remodeling people's homes. And because I didn't have that many qualities, but I was honest. That was one thing I always, and so people, I always had no problem getting work. people, when I finished fixing somebody's home, they'd always call their friends. And so that's how I was maintaining myself at the time. But then when I started reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, then it really had a deep impression on me. I was reading many different philosophy books at the time. Prior to Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, I had read all the books from the 60s. Maybe some of you may remember them. Be Here Now, Ram Dass, Paramahansa Yogananda, Autobiography of a Yogi. I was reading somebody else. Not many people remembered him, but I was reading a lot from Stephen Gaskin. Yeah, The Caravan and Monday Night Class in San Francisco. I was reading Alan Watts, very much intrigued me at that time. I can give you a whole list. That's just the tip of the iceberg. I was reading another popular author at the time was, what was that, the author, The Separate Reality?
Carlos
Castaneda. I read all his books. And I have to confess that I was a very impressionable youth, and whatever book I read became my philosophy. You know, as soon as I read a book, I said, that's it. You know, and I started telling people what my philosophy was, because that was the freshest philosophy in my mind. And then I remember reading a book by, I think it was Richard Morris Buck. And it was a book about impersonal philosophy. I can't remember what it was called. And that became my philosophy. And then I stumbled. All those books I purchased because they were attractive, but when I stumbled on Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita unexpectedly, and then finally when I read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, my first impression that I had was, now here's a book that is compelling, but it seems to be telling me to do a lot more than anybody else told me in the other books that I read. And I started to wonder, like, you know, am I ready for it? And I said, no. And I remember very distinctly putting the book on the bookshelf and thinking, I'll come back to this some other time. And then Prabhupada, you know, because he oftentimes would speak about it, he mentions it in the Bhagavad Gita, that, you know, many people question, why is there a need for another version of Bhagavad Gita? There's so many translations of Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, and in the introduction, he explained that because many people have taken Krishna's words and they've presented it, but they've lost the essence of Krishna's instructions because they presented it in a way that didn't preserve Krishna's purpose for speaking Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, he said, therefore, I felt it was necessary to present Bhagavad Gita as it is, right, as intended by the original speaker. And that, of course, created an impression upon me. And then, although I was trying to forget about it, my whole perspective changed, and of course that became my current philosophy at that time, was Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And then what really, of course, began to take place is that when everything started, my perspective of the world dramatically changed. And I began to realize that if I want to live a life consistent with what I've read in this book, Srila Prabhupada has actually presented a wholesome way of living which balances spiritual life with how one lives, which is something I somehow couldn't grasp in many other philosophy books that I studied. It's because there was philosophy, there was thinking high thoughts, but then, you know, there was work, there was many other obligations I had to do, and somehow bringing them together for me was, at that time, was like a big, how do you do it? It's like two, you know, give some time for spiritual life, but then it seems like my other life was inconsistent with my thoughts. And I was really in duality, because I wanted to be whole. I didn't want to be just, I felt like I was cut in half, but I wanted to be whole. And then I began to realize that after reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, that he was presenting a wholesome way of life, how to bring the two together, how to live in a way that's consistent with one's spiritual thoughts. And, of course, because that's what Krishna's message was in Bhagavad Gita. And because Prabhupada presented it as it is, by Krishna's grace, Prabhupada's mercy, accessing Prabhupada's mercy, I felt like I had my first access to Prabhupada's mercy was being able to understand his intention in presenting Bhagavad Gita. And then, of course, the rest is history. I began associating with members, his disciples, and then learning how to live the life that Prabhupada spoke about in the pursuit of Krishna consciousness. But what really, as I said, I wanted to speak about, and what I hope Jai Veda Maharaj will also speak about, is how much Srila Prabhupada's example helped myself and everyone else who associated with him, who heard from him, who saw him, who meditated on his instructions. Because I didn't have so much personal association, I spent a lot of time reading about him. And reading about him from those who associated with him. And one thing that I really discovered in reading so much about him, which came later, much later. Of course, during the 70s, I would always hear about him. I would hear from him from senior devotees associated with him, and they would tell me stories about him. But then when books started becoming compiled by his followers, I started reading more and more about him. And what impressed me the most, that Prabhupada's capacity to change people's life was, of course, that he was Krishna conscious, but not just Krishna consciousness, but he was genuine. I mean, what you see is what you get. And you know, reading many of the books, I've been speaking about this a lot. I've been cross-referencing some of the stories which are told about some of his early followers, who many of them were actually clueless about what Prabhupada was doing. But they were just attracted to him. But they were clueless, as to, you know, especially Prabhupada, we were talking about how Prabhupada, you know, he came in the Lower East Side, how he got there is a long story, but which was mostly the hippie culture. And mostly the hippies were coming. And you think about it, you know, I grew up in the hippie generation. For those who grew up in the hippie generation during the 60s, our biggest, for me and for everyone else that I associated with, like, reject authority was sort of like our, that was our motto of life. Like, don't accept any authority, right? Question authority, you know, question authority, reject authority. And here's somebody coming, Srila Prabhupada, who's coming, who represents the highest authority. It's surrounded by hippies. You know, and how do you put the two and two together? I mean, put the two together, like, here's somebody who's speaking from the highest authoritative platform. He's speaking from Krishna's words, and Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, there's no matakparataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya. He says, there's no truth that's superior to me. Everything rests on me, just like pearls are strung on a thread. And Prabhupada would quote that, and you know, he would present it in a way that was very authoritative. And I oftentimes listened to lectures in 1966. Prabhupada was reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 19. You know, like Rupa Goswami's really elevated topics, you know. And when you think about his audience, it was very hard for them to fully grasp what Prabhupada was speaking about. You know, even now when I listen to those lectures after practicing Krishna consciousness for 42 years, I think how deep they really were, really deep. And you, I even can only scratch the surface of Prabhupada's presentation. So imagine. But what was it that, you know, that really attracted people was his genuineness. That, you know, that when Prabhupada talked about surrender to Krishna, when Prabhupada talked about, you know, being Krishna conscious, when Prabhupada talked about being, you know, self-satisfied, you know, happy in any condition of life, always ready to do, you know, he walked his talk. And that's hard to find sometimes. Somebody who speaks on very high subject matters, but walks their talk. It lives it. Not only does it's one thing to speak about high subject matters, but it's another thing to live it. Because what convinces people is not the high subject matter, it's living it. It's so you have access to it and the person who's speaking it. In fact, we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, and one of the reasons why Krishna descended as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is because Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, but after he appeared 5,000 years ago, he decided he had to come again. Because in this age of Kali Yuga, which is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, he had to come as the Supreme Lord, but he came as Channa Avatar in a disguised incarnation. He didn't come as God. He came disguised as a devotee. Because he was thinking, I have to teach by my own example. If I don't teach by my own example, how will people know? So, but he's God. How can he teach by his own example? So he had to come as a devotee to teach by his example. And what was his example? He was always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. He was Krishna himself, but in the mood of his greatest devotee. Without an example, it's so hard. It's just theory. It's philosophy. But Prabhupada was a living example. A living example of Krishna consciousness. Just looking at him, he was just... I remember the first time I looked at him. It was in a class in Philadelphia in 1975. And it's a little story. It's me, but it's Prabhupada. Please remember. We went to a Rathiatra festival, and we were staying some distance away because Prabhupada was there, and there were so many people there that, you know, not everyone could fit in the temple, so they put us up in some place across the river. And we were late for class in the morning, and the temple room was full. And there was about a good bunch of us. And we walked into the temple, and Prabhupada was sitting there on the Vyasasan, and there was no place to go. And the devotee was standing next to the door. He would just sort of like close the door. And when he closed the door, I was completely crestfallen. I mean, and everyone else too. Like, I wanted to see Prabhupada. And then somehow, within a minute, the door opened again. And Prabhupada was on the Vyasa saying, open the door. And then we looked in, he said, come in. And of course, I was a little bit, I don't know, you could think of the right word when I describe it, how I was, but I decided to try to go up as front, as close up front as possible. And when I did that, Prabhupada, I looked at Prabhupada and Prabhupada looked right at me. And boom, just looking. I mean, just, he looked right through me, obviously. And the only thing I could do was immediately look to the ground and slink down immediately wherever I was. Get on the floor. That one glance in itself, you know, is like will last a lifetime for me. It'll last a lifetime. I felt that he saw, not he didn't see the covering, he saw me. And he was telling me, like, what are you doing in this material world? Don't you know you're supposed to be with Krishna? Not supposed to be doing stupid things like this. Just his glance. So I can imagine, he embodied Krishna consciousness. And just by seeing him, by hearing him, and by observing him, it gave us hope and trust that, yes, that Krishna consciousness is not just a philosophy, it's real, because we looked at somebody who's real. It made all the difference in the world. It becomes real when you look at somebody who's real. Otherwise, it's just philosophy. But before that, I had so many philosophies, but I didn't have somebody who was real. That all the philosophy that I read, all the books that I had read at that time, and I had read many of Prabhupada's books even before I saw him for the first time. In fact, he had already accepted me as a disciple even before physically seeing him. But this was the Srila Prabhupada that I grew up in Krishna consciousness with, and continue to grow in Krishna consciousness with, because he said, I will live forever in my books. That's how I met Prabhupada. I know that he's in his books, because that's how I met him. I didn't see him for years later, 2 years later. That's how I met him, changed my life, everything. So I know he's in his books. There's no question, beyond a shadow of doubt. I go into Prabhupada's books, it's Prabhupada. And this is what he left. And this is how people can go on in Krishna consciousness with hope that it's attainable, it's possible. There's something, maybe more than I have to get, but we have the example and we have it right in Prabhupada's books. And of course, the more that we live by those books, the more we also can become examples as well. But that's another topic. I don't want to go beyond what the scope of my initial presentation, and I don't want to eclipse Jayadvaita Maharaj, who I believe can really share something of substance for all of us, having associated with Prabhupada. Maybe we can ask him if he could speak a few words about Prabhupada too.
Yeah, I guess